being interviewed will be Captain Raymond Dobbins, who is the acting senior advisor of the 42nd during TAN CAN. Arrived in country, and when were you assigned to the 42nd?
I arrived in country 27 August 72 and was assigned to the 42nd. Arrived in 42nd, TAN CAN, 2nd or 3rd of September,
72. Where was the area of operations for the 42nd at this time?
At this time, the 42nd they were extended over to about 3 kilometers east of Manhattan. We got no northern boundary. The southern boundary was halfway, approximately halfway between Canton and the Tenkin, and had no western boundary, or no eastern boundary, excuse me.
What type of operations would be
conducted? Because normally, the regiment was in a defensive posture. We had fire base 5 and 6 with a requirement to keep at least one battalion on each fire base. We had a defensive Tenkin, which is a large area. And we also had defensive Dokto 2, which is an airstrip, required the fucking half a battalion at each location of those, Tenkin and Dokto 2. We had also a battalion located at Tenkin for a total of 4 battalions. We were known in this posture most of the majority of the time in defensive type setup.
When did you first, what first indications did you get that there was going to be a major offensive conducted in the Tan Can area?
Mainly from Mr. Vance, talking to the press. And he fed out through the press quite often, and we gained indications of it back, I'd say, in November when we started receiving road buildups, cross-border type operations with CCC, of course, was classified and not made available to us. But we first got indications, and it was late November when the buildup was actually pushing down the start. And we posted surveillance type aircraft, and in the middle of October, I think it was, all surveillance aircraft left MRT, so we had no surveillance aircraft available. From November on up through, until the division forward moved our location in January, we were getting indications of road building south of Fire Base 6 and coming out of base area more or less 6 on 9 over there, coming into the Compton province. The major portions of it were just road building operations. We went on several offensive type operations, made several good sized contacts that seemed to be staging areas. One of them was to the east of Tan Can, like 17 to 18 kilometers. This was conducted in January, 14 day operation. We went into a good sized base area in that location. And at that time it was occupied, so we had a good operation there. But we had indications of it leading up to it. I'd say from the back in November sometime.
Well, what type of reaction ended the 42nd when you were discovering what type of operations did they conduct and
okay.
What type of developed targets?
The 42nd conducted work operations. We started getting the requirement to cut down on fire base 5 and 6, the manpower required up there. So we turned at it with one battalion. We could split the battalion and man both fire bases. So that left us one battalion that we could operate in offense with. So we started going on operations, offensive type operations, would break one, at least one battalion, in some cases two battalions away. And we'd go on an offensive operation. We did pull our third battalion back from Compton area. It was in January when we did this. And so that left us two battalions that we could maneuver with most of the time. And the majority of the time, from late November to the time we were overrun, or the Tan Can was hit forward, we were conducting offensive operation.
What type of support were you getting both from the Army and the U.S. during these offensive operations?
Okay, the U.S. artillery was pulled out of Tan Can immediately after I went there in September, or got there in September, so we had no U.S. artillery support. With the exception of 175 from Pontoon, and then on critical operations down south towards Khantoum, and to actually just north of Khantoum. And we were supporting that location of 175, but they left country, and I think it was no wonder when they left. Ivan artillery, we had numerous artillery pieces, never operated outside of the Ivan artillery plant, and it was adequate artillery. U.S. air, we didn't face very little U.S. air until the actual offenses, you know, started breaking out. We could definitely tell there was an offense coming. We worked the FTL quite often in the area. Sometimes we worked weeks on time on the air drop operations. So support-wise, I think we had pretty good support. Being out there was great, erratic. We did have a few problems starting with the Hewitt type operations, slick operations. Nothing that was real drastic, especially up until the new offensive. We did get the new police came and we were getting a lot of anti-aircraft fire.
What about our flight strikes?
Our flight strikes are good, outstanding. But they never get placed in the location that the advisor on the ground wants them. As an example, we've got too many safety factors built into them. The advisor on the ground working directly with the Ivan to build an R flight. It goes into division. Division changes it just a little bit, safety factor. It goes to 2 Corps. 2 Corps changes it a little bit more for safety factor. It goes to Mike B, where it was approved, sideline. And they change it a little bit more. So when it comes back and is laid in, it might be as much as 2, 3, 4 kilometers off target from where the advisor on the ground wants it. So there is a factor that's built in that they've got to go by on that. But it's not too responsive as far as defensive or an offensive type, as far as my concern. North Vietnamese use our clients. They know that once we put one in on location, we're not going to expand another one for a couple of weeks. So we found that they were moving right back into an on-flight location, possibly the next day after putting them in.
Well, now I'd just like for you to start. When you considered the situation to be getting critical at Tan Can, and go through kind of a chronological order on the events that happened as far as you experienced them.
Okay.
When you were
about 10 days before we were really hit at Tan Can, the senior advisor went on leave. The 1st of April, though, we started getting periodically incoming type round of ammunition. I estimated it to be 122 field gun type and 130 field gun type. And we knew that the 320th NVA division and the 2nd NVA division, which was opposing us, had the 122 and 130 ESPs. And they had a range of about 27 kilometers. They'd set out 27 kilometers and just fly by all the time rounds they went to anyway. And you have nothing really to count on because all we had was, most of it was 155. And so when they started using this type of ammunition on us around the first part of April, especially around the 10th of April, then we pretty well knew that we were going to get something in, ground attack, attack or something. And we captured several little documents that said that 10 Can was a major target, with Khantoum being the secondary target when they took the 10 Can. We even captured a drawing on how they were going to take 10 Can, but it didn't pay off, the way the drawing had depicted it. On about the 12th or 13th of the month, we started getting sappers trying to reach the perimeter and just come in and make reconnaissance, A lot of the sappers were killed. We almost killed one overnight with no ambushes, mechanical ambushes, which the Arvin are very efficient at setting up. At first, only had the full hot device on the make ambushes, and we were getting them cut. So then we started putting a pole release type. What it is just a field expedient device that we rig up, and if they cut the thing, it goes off also and sends it with it to its trip. So we are getting an average of sulfur a night from about the 18th thing up until we get hit. The disposition of forces, Arvin has never operated at company level in company operations, except for the reconnaissance company. It always operated at battalion level operations. We got a big push on in April there to get the Arvin to operate its companies, separate companies. And we sent our first battalion, which had about 400 men in it, the east of Tancan. This was about Friday before we got hit, which would make the date the 21st. They've been fighting up there since about the 17th. They were overrun on the 21st with no ammunition to defend work. They came back in the next morning, Saturday morning, the 22nd, with he had a total of 27 men. So this is status of one battalion, and Tankin was hit. We had another battalion, which was at Dalton Moat. We pulled them back in towards Tankin on Friday the 21st. They had one company across on the eastern side of Tankin, and the battalion minus was still just north of Tankin, right outside the perimeter, really. And the enemy ship was artillery. And this battalion had, I think it was 68 casualties on Saturday. So we were receiving a lot of artillery. I estimated 1,000 rounds a day a week preceding the 23rd when they hit it hard. And then on the Saturday and Sunday, we stayed before with Saturday and Sunday was the 22nd and 23rd. They hit us with about 2,000 rounds of artillery a day. And it was a lot, we had a lot of dead rate. Somebody just put them out to get the ammunition out. And I estimated a 60% dead rate because it's five whole volleys, you know, and not a one of them exploded. But even the dead had a big effect on the troops up there. In Tancan perimeter itself, on the morning of the 24th, we had 300 combat troops and 900 support troops in the division. The division support troops were not organized into any counterattack force that I know of. So that was pretty well the disposition of our forces. We had one battalion that was at north of Tancan, up around Bato District Headquarters. And on Saturday the 22nd, Friday the 21st, we moved them south to Zimbabwe Bridge instead of the fire base there. We had one battalion of the 41st attached to us. I think it was the 41st or the 41st. And our first battalion that overrun on the hill east of Tancan, we committed the 41st battalion up there, and they were in a status of being overrun themselves. The time we got hit on Monday morning. So that's pretty well the disposition of all of our forces. We Fridays 5 and 6 at that time were manned by the Ranger Battalion. And Doctor 2, Astro area, of course, was 47th area. So Tancan area itself, that's pretty well the setup on our troops. On Saturday morning, we encountered our first wire defense guided missile, or wire type guided missile, fired at us. It streaked over the town of Tancan, coming from northeast, just up around the pagoda area. You got a little up there, there's a pagoda northeast of Tancan. Anything north of that was considered fair game to. They set up behind the pagoda and fired these wire guided missiles. And we only fired a few of them on Saturday. And we got word that they were firing them because the regimental commander and I were in the village. And some of the villagers pointed out this wire to us. And then, of course, we released some of the wire sent in. It was going to be sent in to two corps for us, and that, you know, for analysis to see what kind it was. But unfortunately, it never did get sent in. On Sunday, they hit the first one on Sunday. We had a battalion size contact. We thought it was a squad contact outside, just outside of Oklahoma on the eastern side. The enemy had dug in that location, and we sent a sweep out. It was a platoon sweep, and they engaged, and they thought they'd engaged the squad. But later on, we found out it was much more than a squad, and from the volume of fire and everything that we drew from that location, we figured we'd fix the battalion. But we had tanks attached to us. We pulled out of the 10-can bomber with four tanks to go down and reinforce our infantry sweep area. And, of course, they got online and was moving forward. Small arc fire, and a crewman got hit, wounded on the head. So the tank pulled back and went up to the gate and had a gun. We no sooner stopped to unload his wounded man than one of his wives got his missiles hit him. The rest of the tanks were all knocked out with the wire gun missile system.
Which of the other three, the scientists,
right,
were there?
We had three and one. The other thing is, we had one other one in the front of the area. All of them are T-41s.
M-41.
And we had one more inside the perimeter Sunday night. And we didn't have a crew for the thing. All the crews had been fouled up in one way or the other. So we lost the two main bunkers that were overlooking the road approach to Tan Camp by the through the wide-headed missile system. Also, one of these bunkers was a 106, which we used in Canada using an anti-tank defense role. The other 106 was knocked out by possibly 340 rounds. On Monday morning, or Sunday night, they also lined up about, I'd estimate 20 or 30 B-40 and B-41 gunners, you know, just to the north of Tangram, and they fired over the L-19 strip into the ammo dump. And tried to set it on fire, which they were successful in doing. This was Sunday night.
How many wire-guided missiles would you estimate were fired?
On Saturday, they only fired maybe three or four. And on Sunday, it's hard to tell because explosions going off all around, you know. We've got about 2,000 rounds of ammo in that day. And how many of these were wire-guided missiles, I don't know.
I understand somebody from the 42nd went out and retrieved one that was a dud or exploded there, right? Was that
this happened in Adelaide.
Well, Major Weiss said something about...
We had some wire.
A U.S. going out on the morning of the 22nd, right before the one hit the top.
I don't really know. I was not really division advisor people. I was out trying to get the contact that was to the eastern side of the perimeter. I was trying to do something out there and be able to push and wait on that side. When the D-top received their round and it went through the generator shacks there and set the top on fire, that fast like. So they might have found one. I wouldn't say so. I just wasn't with the division people that much, and radio communications, I held it down to a minimum unless I was working with guns or smoky type aircraft. On Sunday night, about midnight, after we had taken a real shelling all day that day, pretty well knocked out all of our top locations, D-top advisors or division advisors had moved up from my group compound to the top. And I was located down with the regimental commander in his top. I had one other advisor with me, Ken Yoden. And Ken was advising the assistant or deputy regimental commander. And regimental commander sent his deputy up in the water tower to sit and check my coming aircraft. And to him with an advisory concept of where your counterpart goes, you go, can not with it. And did an outstanding job of the deputy, Inspector Dunsips, and airstrikes here. Up until they got so bad that they couldn't get killed. Also, had a lot of gunships. We put gunships in daily. I think I had six sets of guns working, and six sets is 12 guns. So I had guns on station all day Sunday, and right well after about Sunday night, they were still shooting. And we still had the infantry dug in out on the wire, and then we'd break them loose, really. So Trent was up in the water tower, and I was down about 400 meters away from him, and there was no CP. And Inspector Aircraft reported that he picked up a tank column headed towards Dokdo District, coming from the west, and which we put it just north of the Pentet area, coming straight across due east towards Dokdo District. We thought district headquarters was their target. Inspector was engaging them with his ordnance. He counted, I think it was 10 and a report of 18 to 22 vehicles. And they moved in, moved there all the way towards Dokdo District, and then they swung south. And we had an operation about a week earlier out in that location with tanks. So we had already proved that all the bridges in the area would hold all their armored vehicles from moving out over for hours. So, they swung south and used the exact approach that we had used.
Was there any plans to blow these bridges since it was obvious they could have blown them?
There was plans to blow them, but unfortunately we didn't have any control over the bridges. They were all manned by popular force troops.
Dokdo District then had the control of the...
They were all rigged to blow, and one of them was controlled by the Dokdo District.
Did you have any communication at all with Dokdo District? Or?
Yes, we had communication. They were on our frequencies. Unfortunately, also, the people that were in charge of owning that bridge had left the area. We didn't have any contact with them.
How many bridges were there?
There were two bridges. Either one of them could stop the oncoming tanks. Inspector engaged these tanks in a stop. And he would put working on that one, he'd claim a kill. Put working on that one, he'd move to another. Later on, we got a call from popular forces. These tanks that he claimed to knock out started back up again, and we're back in the column. They pulled all the way into Tancan city limits, or right at the northern checkpoint of Tancan. They stopped, and they dismounted their troops that were riding on them. All the troops rode in on the tanks, and were first troops. 10 of the tanks backed off and went around north and came in and set up on the L-19 strip. And supported by fire the next morning when they actually did the assault. The remaining tanks, which Arvin reported 18, came and lined up right in front of the main gate, right on the road. And we could hear them all night, you know, running around, tanks. We had made one company into a tank killer team, and they claimed to have destroyed two tanks and Tancan itself with a lot. And approximately 5:30 at quarter of 6 in the morning, it was still hazy and just beginning to break light. They turned their headlights on their tanks. And a big long column of tanks with their headlights on them, coming into the target. And they met
in column or in line?
They were in line. And the ones at the L-19 strip were in column and started firing their main guns at markers and stuff, you know, from the side of the front. At the same time,
Well, the ones that came through the main gate were all supported by infantry. As the tanks came through, the infantry started shooting the bunker lines. And I estimated a couple of battalions of infantry, but there might have been, you know, less or more. I don't really know. Anyway, we had another infantry attack, a straight infantry attack, from the south. And it tied up our bunker line on the south, southern portion. So they had a good three-pronged attack on us. And we had nothing to counter the armor, except luck. And very few of those that were actually tied up.
I understood there were 6 106s brought up to Tancan. Was that
2 106s at Tancan perimeter? We had two at Dot Moat, two at Dot Tosa.
And one of these was the one that was knocked out, you mentioned previously. What happened to the other one?
I don't really know. Unless it was abandoned or knocked out one way or another. The psychological effect of these tanks, you're just going to let too much of the troops. And the division advisors were picked up very early in the game. Really, before too much activity was going on, they were in a helicopter.
About what time is this?
I don't know, really, because I wasn't flashing the clock. I called them, and they said we were going out the wire, and it was no more than 30 minutes after the assault started, so they wanted to know my location. I gave it to them, but I was in a different position than they were in. I was the only U.S. there. You know.
Where were you at the time of the attack then?
At the time of the attack, I was sitting at the main gate of the 27th Army. And
this is where the...
The armor came through.
The armor, the 18, about 18, is that correct?
That's
what armor counted. How many did you see yourself?
Well, it was just a whole line of lights. I didn't take time to count lights.
And this is right up, this is on the main gate, around the main gate of the perimeter?
Yes, the main gate of the compound. We only had one gate that was on the northeastern side of the perimeter.
And then what happened going after the U.S. were evacuated? What were your actions?
After the U.S. were evacuated, I couldn't talk to anyone except fax. And we still had ground cover, and they couldn't lay in airstrikes on them at the time. And when the ground cover lifted, or the fog lifted, which was about 7:15 or 7:30, somewhere around that area, then the high-performance aircraft could work in the area, and we started bringing in, laying in air in the tanks. And VNAP, we rotated. The regimental commander would lay in a set of VNAPs, and, depending on who had the most fuel at the time. The VNAP was about out of fuel, we'd lay them in first and let ours load up. But there were just targets up there, unlimited targets for them. Mr. Van was the only U.S. I could talk to other than the fact, and he ordered a reinforced column out of this. The battle was, we were still picking up advisors. He ordered a couple of tanks and at least a company to reinforce us from Doctel 2. They moved out about 200 meters from Doctel 2, and the fact said, if those are your tanks coming up the road, so they're destroyed now. They got something destroyed them from the north of the road, you know. So the two tanks got about 200 or 300 meters from Doctel, and on Doctel 2 and were hit by some type of anti-tank weapon. And that's not the reinforcements. The regimental commander could talk only periodically to the division commander. We didn't really know his true location, so the last time we seen him was Sunday evening at Edward Magby's compound. And the only U.S. that I could talk to was Mr. Van and the fact.
Did you have any contact with Captain Young in the tower at this time?
The last contact I had with Ken was about 6:30 in the morning, and told him to get out of the water tower, and he said he couldn't, and he didn't elaborate, and I didn't issue it.
Continuation of the interview with Captain Dobbins. So would you start now where about 6:30 in the morning when you last talked to Captain Unit, what occurred after this time? You've been directing in your air targets and that. What were your actions during this
period? Okay, the last time I talked to Captain Unit there, the NV-8 already pierced the perimeter. And the northeastern side, through the main gate. And the southern side, the infantry had already breached the perimeter there also. The recon company was on the southern side, and they claimed at that time to have over 100 kills in the wire, which I never could confirm. We just never did make it around to that side of the perimeter. The tanks moved in, swept through the perimeter, and during the entire attack, and up until about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, they were still firing their artillery. They never shut their artillery off. These tanks were excellent targets for the airstrikes. The fight would roll in and mark the tank, and the tank would stop, try no evasion action. And some of the tracks had we'd call them a quad 40 type operation on them. Sound like a duster with a slow timing. And every time a FAC or a high-performance aircraft would roll in, they would fire this thing, and it'd just go chug-chug, you know, and chug-chug. It'd sound like an industrial with a head spell and timing set slow on it. But it wasn't any aircraft-type weapon, and we kept giving these to the FACs first. As soon as we located one, we'd give it to the FAC. We just basically went from bunker to bunker and crawled around, and sometimes we hid in culverts and this type of stuff. There was about 20-something of us, and every now and then we'd engage the enemy and pull back. And basically what we were trying to do was to reorganize the regiment and get some type of defense going.
This is with your counterpart?
Right.
Well, I haven't gotten his name yet. Who was your...
Lieutenant Colonel Tom, T-H-O-N-G. But he lost contact with all of his elements about 10 o'clock in the morning. And at this time, we continued to find targets for the air. And they were not too hard to find. You could hear a tank rumbling around, you know. And when a fight would go off station, it seemed that they would try to move their tanks, you know, just keep them where the next fight wouldn't find them. And we kept turning these locations to the fights and adjusting their strikes on them. And the northwestern portion of the perimeter was breached by the tanks, and the infantry breached it first, and then the tanks breached it. But we went into a hidden bunker that evidently a couple of regimental commanders ago had built, and been passed down through the chain of command as to where this bunker was. And fortunately for us, it was there because we went into it and had 19 Army soldiers, most of them officers with me, and we stayed there throughout the rest of the day.
Where was this bunker located?
It was at Colonel Tong's house.
Which is with...
Regimental Commander's house.
This is within the 42nd perimeter then?
Right. It was within the perimeter. And we stayed there until 8 o'clock that night, about 7:30, 8 o'clock that night. Periodically, we'd go out and check to see what was going on. But basically, there was not that much fighting going on. There was still resistance being offered in specific bunker areas, you know. But we could talk to no one on the radio, and even no one on the ground from maneuver elements on the radio. So, we just felt like we didn't have any other means to resist, you know, other than what we could put in from the air. Fire base 5 and 6, well, that was the next day they were evacuated. But they had 105s on fire base 5, which were about 600 or 700 meters short of reaching our location to support us. So all of our indirect fire was cut out, and no indirect fire weapons to support. That night, about 2000 hours, we tried to we broke up into three-man groups and tried a B&E, and at that time the moon was just a little bit too high, too bright, and we got detected trying to go out the western side of the perimeter. It was really going out southwest. Got detected and lost a couple of men there. We come back. Instead of going back into the bunker that we'd hit in that day, we went under a, I guess you'd call it a pig pen type location, where we had hogs on one level, you know, and PSP on the top of it. It was right on the bunker line on the eastern side. And we hit out there until around midnight. We tried another attempt. At that time, we had Spectre up in the area, and he was illuminating. He got some illumination behind us. Sort of left us detected again, so we pulled back. The moon went down about 4 in the morning, and at that time, we also had a pretty good ground fog, which assisted us, myself and my interpreter, and Colonel Tong and his secretary, which was a good time. We made it out the western side of Thunder and policed up some men that had went through a minefield and were pretty well wounded up, messed up, so policed them up and moved on south, and we picked up about 2 kilometers south of Timken.
Who picked you up?
The aircraft next morning.
I've had some reports that once this increasing volumes of fire began to come in on Tan Can, that the artillery there was just, did not respond to it, any type of counter battery fire. Can you give me any light in this?
Well, on Friday we got a lot of rockets. Friday before we got hit, we got a lot of rockets from the base of Fire Base 5. We were between Fire Base 5 and Yankee. We had FO teams on Fire Base 5 and 6, U.S. type FO teams. We were trying to resupply the 1st Battalion, which was completely out of ammunition, trying to resupply the Phenal. They took a lot of ground fire and wouldn't go back in. So what we were doing, we had to go to Kontoon to refuel. And Tan Can started taking incoming rockets. So we flew over the rocket bridge, we call it, the rocket belt. And we could see them firing the rockets. All right, we had a fight. It was coming on station. But we had to leave station to get POL. All right, I turned in a 6-digit coordinates on these rocket positions, which was well within artillery fan. And Colonel Tom cranked his artillery up into that location. And I gave 6-digit coordinates back in over the top. And we went on to get POL, and we came back, and they laid the area in about 500 meters off of that coordinates that I'd given them based on the ground FO team at Fire Base 5, which couldn't see, couldn't observe the rockets being fired, but they could hear them. And we had an error there, you know. We had to suffer. We detected their 122 and 130 gun positions. Lieutenant Colonel Cito did about a month before we were overrun. And Daly requested arc light position on their positions. And until this day, I don't think an arc light's went on. These were outside of the fire pen of any of our artillery. And but to answer your question specifically on outgoing artillery, we had incoming, it was very little. From the location.
How would you classify the leadership within the 42nd?
All right. The regimental leadership was outstanding. We had 2 battalion commanders that I considered outstanding. And we had 2 that were more or less, they weren't great, but they weren't the worst that I've seen. Leadership at company level is, it was very difficult to make an assessment on it because you've never seen the companies operate individually, except for the recon company, and the recon company commander was outstanding, a lieutenant. But the situation at Tan Can, the regimental commander could maneuver 2 companies. He could not maneuver a battalion. And of course, this goes back into some political activity here that we're not supposed to discuss too much. But anyway, all he could maneuver was two companies. Anything over a battalion or up higher than two companies had to come from the division. And the regimental commander had no say-so in at all in how his troops were. The disposition of his troops.
Could he ask to come in a certain way?
He could ask, but very seldom do you find an Arvin leader that after he asks over a couple of times, he won't come back and ask anymore. And that's what, a lot of cases, you know, you'll find that this learns good leadership. It's detrimental leadership where you can't maneuver your forces the way you want to. So, he had no choice in where his troops were. I think his troops would have held much better had we had the division headquarters at Khantoum or someplace. Didn't have 900 support troops trying to get away from some tanks. Of course, once support troops broke, his troops broke. That was a big part of it. Just the lack of coordination, lack of organization, really, that big mob that the division had up there. And I think Colonel Kaplan would agree with it.
When you were, do you have any personal opinions on what caused the as far as any reasons that you feel that Tan Can happened as it was, but other than this, the support troops being around where they were, any personal observations might assist and help to evaluate?
We had the airborne up there for a while, and the airborne had unlimited supplies of artillery and aviation. They were supported by division, 22nd Division supply channel. The ammunition rate got down to where we could fire 20 rounds for each tube of ammunition we had. This was about, I guess the situation lasted about a week before we overrun. That's about all we could fire. An ASR, you know, of 20 rounds per day or two. And when you limit someone on their artillery support, you're really taking a lot away from the troops. But had we been able to resupply the 1st Battalion, which was east of Tan Can, and had they held, you know, we just got ammunition to them, I think they would have held.
They were totally out of all kinds
they
of...
They were completely out of everything. So they walked back in with 27 men. I guess the remainder was men he had. The fact that we didn't have anything to engage Army with was another big factor. And also the fact that we didn't really expect that much armor to come into us. We still had, the last intelligence we had was 6 to 8 PT-76s in base area 609. So we had nothing to base a big armor attack on, no intelligence. And except for the road building network that they were building. And in these road building networks, we employed LERPs and on numerous teams to put out the anti-tank mine. I think they got 3 truck kills confirmed. Trucks hit the mines. They had plenty of ammunition and everything up there. We really didn't have that much to combat them with.
Do you have anything else that might assist in writing the history or any other observations?
No, not really. Unless you've got some questions, I'm sure somebody else has mentioned.
Well, there was one other area I understand. One other indication I had when situation was thought to be critical was when, this goes back to the division staff, the division G3 had been falsifying positions. Do you have any knowledge of any of this? He had, supposedly the battalions, he said, were on the ridgeline of the east, were up on, the battalion was up on the ridge, was on the military crest of the hill and was moving forward, when actually it was on the reverse slope moving to the rear. Was this the battalion that was out of ammunition and that was the reason, or was, do you have any further knowledge of that?
No, I don't. That was division level. 41st and 41st on Friday was ordered up to reinforce the 1st and the 42nd, which was getting over there on that hill. It run out of ammunition, it was running out. And the location that the DTOC had did not correspond with the location that the regiment had. That's the location that the battalion. And I took a helicopter out on Saturday morning, or not, it was Friday evening, and verified the location, and the location that the regiment had on them was the correct location. But the location the division had on Friday was a good kilometer and a half out. But I don't know whose fault it was, you know, it's plotting it and reporting it, but you don't get these people to stop smoke when you fly over them, you know. You pretty well tell that they're there. From their poncho tents and this type of stuff.
Okay, now, I'm trying to get all the names straight. On the 42nd team, it was Colonel Cito, before he went on R&R, and then there was yourself and Captain Young here.
Right.
With the 47th at Dot Toe, it was Colonel Brownlee.
Colonel Brown and Captain Carden.
And Captain Carden, those were the only two there. And then with the division people, Colonel Kaplan, Colonel McLean, Major Weiss, Captain Stewart, Lieutenant Jones, Major Warmoth, Jones and Warmoth, or Warmoth was injured in a helicopter crash and Jones was killed in that. Was there anyone else that...
We had Major Carter, which was a cavalry advisor. And we also had Sergeant Ward, which was a administrative type NCO that was assigned to the, or he was attached to the 42nd RCAT to assist us while the division team was up there, the administrative and supply functions. And we had a Spec 4 Zollicoffer, which was a medic that was attached for the same purposes, only for when the division team was up. Was when we had those two individuals. The rest of the time, the RCAT only called for three men, and the CAL only called for one. And, as I said before, these two NCOs or two men were there to assist us. Zollicoffer was killed in a helicopter crash, or after, and Sergeant Ward was picked up out of the helicopter crash a few days later.
Okay, so I have nothing further. You don't have any other observations?
Not unless you've got some gaps you want to, or some, I'd possibly have some light to it.
No, I can't think of anything. If I do, I'll probably have to make a trip back over before you degross. Okay. This concludes the interview with Captain Donovan.